Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we continue now with our March series on sleep with Alice Park, a Time Magazine staff writer who covers health and medicine. She joins me each Thursday this month to talk about what we're learning about sleep and our efforts to get more of it. When we started this series, we invited listener suggestions for topics, and several people wanted to know more about sleep apnea, those little interruptions in breathing while asleep, often associated with snoring. So, Alice Park, welcome back to the show. Hi there.
Good morning.
What is apnea? It's not just a fancy name for snoring?
No, it's not. It's a little more involved. What happens with sleep apnea, and it depends on, there are some very clinical and technical descriptions that, you know, they measure how much oxygen you're getting. But basically, the bottom line is that sleep apnea is about when your muscles in the back of your throat relax and they narrow your airway so that you're not able to get enough air in while you're sleeping.
And we often associate, I think people tend to think casually, oh, sleep apnea, that comes from being really overweight. Is there a connection between weight and sleep apnea?
There is. There are many factors that contribute to apnea. There's actually two different kinds. One is called obstructive sleep apnea, and that's the one that's most commonly associated with obesity and excess weight. And the idea there is that the heavier you are and that the thicker your neck circumference is, the more likely your airway will be narrowed. There is another less common form of sleep apnea in which the brain fails to signal the body to basically breathe. And that's less common. It's a little more serious. But the most common kinds that you hear about where people sort of stop breathing for short periods of time during the night is obstructive sleep apnea.
And listeners, if you want to get in on the sleep apnea conversation, you can do so right now. One thing we heard from a few people was a request for alternatives to those sleep masks that some people use for apnea, which apparently I've never seen one, but apparently they're very clunky and big and get in the way of comfortable sleep in other ways. So let's get you folks in on this. If you snore or have apnea or sleep with somebody who does, how do you treat it? 212-433-WNYC. Have you found a comfortable way to sleep soundly, or any questions you have about sleep apnea as an inconvenience or a serious health threat? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Alice, how serious a threat to health or even life is sleep apnea?
Well, sleep apnea can be very serious. It affects about men more often than women, about 4% of U.S. adult men and 2% of women. And it's been linked to an increased risk of heart disease. One study back in 2007 showed that it can increase risk of heart attack or death by 30% in, you know, over the 4 to 5 year study period. And most recently, a study showed that even babies as young as 6 months old who snore, have mouth breathing, or have sleep apnea can increase their risk of having developmental disorders, things like ADHD and behavioral disorders by the time they're 7. So it can have serious health consequences, because basically what you're talking about here is the brain not getting enough oxygen during sleep.
Tell me more about children, because I know you covered a story in Time. You covered a study of health effects, developmental problems in particular for kids with sleep apnea?
So the early period, early infancy, you know, in the first year to 2 years of life, is very important for brain development because, you know, as we all know, the brain continues to develop and form those neural connections that that help us as we get older. And it turns out that children who snore or have sleep apnea and who don't get enough oxygen to their brain during this period may suffer consequences later because their development may be disturbed because of that, that the oxygen may not be allowing the nerve connections to form in the proper way. And the researchers of this study found that by the time children are 4 to 7 years old, if they, you know, had been mouth breathing or had sleep apnea as infants, they were more likely to have disorders like hyperactivity, conduct disorders, and problems getting along with their peers.
Jay in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
I'm a second generation snorer, and I have had a couple of sleep studies done. And they gave me the mask to wear at night, and I was wondering, is there any alternative
So other alternatives to the mask, Alice?
There are some. Depending on how severe the obstruction is, there are other mechanisms, things that are less intrusive than the mask that can help. But if those devices don't work, there is surgery where basically depending on where you have the extra tissue, doctors can go in and remove some of it, which does seem to help some patients. But you really should be talking to your doctor and getting an exam to see whether surgery is right for you. There are several forms of surgery that could help.
Yeah, I was told that surgery is an option, but it's not a home run, though. Like, the apnea still could come back.
Right. There's no guarantee because what they can do is they can try to adjust your jawline and try to adjust, your airway, but there's no guarantee that will solve the problem.
I understand.
Jay, can you talk a little bit about your experience with the mask? Why do you hate it so much?
It's just very, very cumbersome. You strap it on your face. It covers your nose and your mouth. So when you... And it's a rush of air that opens up your airway. So if you move, like I can only sleep on my back, mm-hmm. and I can't move too much at night because it comes off and it's like a rush of air flowing into your eyes now. It's not cool.
I would think that would wake you up.
Yeah, it wakes me up. So it's like, what's the purpose?
Jay, thank you very much. Good luck. Caitlin in Huntington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi. I have a 3-year-old with what I believe is sleep apnea. He hasn't been diagnosed yet, but he also had a history of colic and really bad gastrointestinal problems since he was born almost. And now I'm having a lot of problems potty training him, and we even ended up in the ER last week because he was so basically impacted that he couldn't urinate. So I was wondering if there's any link between sleep apnea and gastrointestinal problems in children, toddlers, 3-year-olds.
Alice, do you know?
I don't know of any studies at the moment, but the study that just came out recently about the behavioral issues shows that we're just beginning to understand the relationship between sleep apnea or snoring in the very, very young. So, kids as young as 6 months. I imagine that this is an area that people will be looking into further, but we still don't know very much about the long-term effects, and now we're just beginning to appreciate that we may need to pay attention to, snoring and mouth breathing in infants as well.
Well, does apnea come from, sleep apnea, come from different causes in children, even infants, than in adults?
It could. Because it hasn't really been studied in infants that much, it's not clear, for example, whether obesity and weight is an issue. In adults, we've got things like alcohol and smoking, which can, increase inflammation and therefore sort of restrict the airway. Obviously not a problem with young kids. So there may be some of the same issues involved, but there may be others that we still haven't learned about yet.
Janet in South Plainfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Janet.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have both central and obstructive apnea, and I use CPAP, but I wondered, one, is there a chance that I'd like to lose about 20 more pounds? People say that helps. But how do we address the central apnea? And also, is there a correlation between the pressure on the CPAP being too high and diverticulitis, which I ended up with?
Is the CPAP the same machine that the earlier caller was talking about? The mask?
Yes, constant pressure air pumped in.
Yes, the continuous positive airway pressure.
Right, that's the same as the mask. So
it is.
The question is, if you lose weight, could you conceivably stop using the CPAP machine?
Conceivably, yes. Losing weight is one of the factors that doctors talk about in terms of helping people with sleep apnea. So that is definitely a factor, and you should definitely discuss with your doctor about how that might help you. As far as your question about CPAP and its relationship to diverticulitis, I'm not aware of whether there is a connection, but the adjustment of the air pressure, because basically the idea is that the CPAP machine will give you a negative air pressure so that it keeps your airways open. It forces your airways to stay open. The adjustment of that really, you should discuss with your doctor and make sure you've got it set at the right level for you.
You know, there was I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and finally, I just wanted to address, you mentioned that you had the combination of both the obstructive and the central sleep apnea, which is the central sleep apnea is a little less understood. You know, as I mentioned, it involves the brain failing to sort of signal the body to continue breathing. So there are different treatments for that, but it is a little less well understood.
And good luck, Janet. There was a 2005 study that found practicing the didgeridoo, you know, that indigenous, I guess it's Australian, wind instrument, cut back on snoring and apnea. So would that indicate that it's a problem with muscle tone?
It certainly might seem that way, doesn't it? But there's clearly multiple factors involved in sleep apnea. One of the things that researchers are coming to appreciate now, for example, is that in China, the rates of sleep apnea among men and women are about the same as they are here. And in China, there tends to be less obesity. So clearly, it's not only weight and obesity and the kind of narrowed airways that we see more commonly here that is the problem. So that could suggest that sort of training those muscles might be helpful. But this is an area where research is still ongoing and that we're just coming to appreciate, you know, some of the longer-term health consequences and some of the causes of it. So more to come.
More to come. John in East Northport is calling to say a gum guard that he uses has stopped his snoring. John, sorry, we don't have time to put you on the air. We'll sneak David in Queens in because, David, you're doing okay with the mask?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's probably life-saving. The mask is adjustable in many ways so that if it's not comfortable, it can be made comfortable. If there are air leaks that you're feeling, that probably means that the gasket isn't on tightly enough. But before I used it, I was falling asleep during the day. I was tired all the time.
Do you have to sleep on your back? The whole time?
I can sleep on my side, and I'm not restless during the night. And whatever it is, when I was first offered it, I turned it down because it's ugly and not an aphrodisiac.
And, David, I have to leave it there because we're out of time. But there, for those of you struggling with a mask, a little bit of hope, and maybe there are adjustments that you can make to make them more comfortable. But we will have to leave it there. Alice Park of Time Magazine will be back next week as we continue our Thursday series about sleep. Alice, thanks a lot.